soul. Today is an auspicious day for Krishna Janmashtami. Speak about Krishna, obviously. There are limited things that we can say about his personality, about his qualities, about his pastimes, and especially about transcendental potency of his holy name. This evening we're going to read a verse which helps us to understand a little bit why Krishna does what he does. And this statement in itself may not be easy for everyone to understand. Because there is a verse, Atasya Kamam Karanam Jivajite, in the Vishnu Purana, which says that Krishna doesn't do anything. So, here I am going to talk about why he does what he does. And at the same time, we have scriptural evidence which states that Krishna doesn't do anything. The beginning of the contradiction. And this verse actually goes on to explain. Here's the many contradictions in Krishna's character. Things that are very difficult to understand. If one tries to understand simply with out devotion to Krishna. This is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, which says that unless one gets a drop of mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, one can never understand his personality, the greatness of his personality. And even if one studies the Vedas from millions of births. Still, Krishna's personality cannot be understood without his mercy. And this verse, which we're going to speak from, explains a little bit about how to obtain Krishna's mercy. Some people think Krishna's mercy, anyways, Krishna's mercy can be calculated in many different ways according to the mentality of the person who perceives it. And Prabhupada is going to speak about that also. How Krishna's mercy manifests in different ways according to the consciousness of the perceiver. Yatamam bhajatetam sattva vijayam. Krishna says, as you surrender, I reward you. So, it's appropriate to speak about these things on Sri Krishna Janmashtami, especially if we're going to understand why does Krishna appear. Because we're observing Krishna's janma. Janma kama cha vedavyam. as Krishna says. My Guru understands the transcendental nature of my janma, my birth, and my activities in this world. He doesn't have to take his birth again, but he attains my eternal abode. So we are observing the Janmashtami, which is the day that Krishna appeared in this world. And why did he come? Why does he come? That's also important. For Vaishnavas, important for everyone, especially for Vaishnavas, because they derive great pleasure by this understanding about Krishna's transcendental personality. But even those who are not Vaishnavas, if they hear it with a little faith, they may also come to accept, appreciate, and even go a step farther, which is to be able to enter into the mysteries of understanding Krishna. Because even hearing about Krishna is service to Krishna. So anyone who simply gives submissive oral reception to the transcendental nature of transcendental pastimes, as Lord Brahma says in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, he says, those who stay in their positions, but they give submissive oral reception to the transcendental glories of the Lord, which are spoken by him personally or spoken by his devotees, they can certainly conquer Krishna, although Krishna is otherwise unconquerable by anyone in the three worlds. So if you hear anything about Krishna, one can conquer Krishna. Anybody think about conquering Krishna before? Why? Is there a reason? Can anyone tell me why you don't think about conquering Krishna? Anybody? Yes?
Are you talking about, so you don't have to think about Krishna because you have to think about Krishna in that sense? Because the only reason you would ever talk about Krishna would be because you have to explain it to other people so they can understand.
We're talking about conquering Krishna. We can get to that. But right now we're talking about conquering Krishna. This is
where do you work?
By devotion. Sadhyatamam Yogos from the Sankirtan Uddhava. Krishna says, the analyzed devotional service rendered by my devotees brings the end of his control. Krishna becomes conquered by devotion. But the devotee never wants to bring Krishna under his control. He doesn't think, how am I going to control Krishna? He doesn't think, how am I going to conquer Krishna? He wants to serve Krishna. But it just so happens that when service is rendered purely, it conquers Krishna. Even though the devotee doesn't think about I want to conquer Krishna. That's why I'm happy nobody raised my hand. Although maybe you didn't realize why you raised your hand. But the devotee doesn't think I want to conquer Krishna. One thinks I want to serve Krishna. I want to please him. I want to make him happy, because that's my position. But when a devotee thinks like that, that let me do something for Krishna, let me please him, let me satisfy him, let me serve him, and let me do it for no other reason except because I want to please and satisfy and serve him, which is sometimes not so easy. Especially when we hear that Krishna's God. The tendency is to think that he's God, means he's got everything. He's the supreme controller. He's the supreme enjoyer. He experiences unlimited pleasure. He's completely independent. He's got everything. And especially if I need something, I think, well, what can I do? What can I do to please him so that I can get something from him? Prabhupada's going to talk about that here, and that's why I'm bringing it up like that. So, let's read the verse. And then we'll talk about it. This verse is Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 8th Chapter, 29th verse. I'll read the Sanskrit first. Navedikas chit bhagavangs jikirshitam tave hamanasya nirnam vidyamanam nayasyakas chit dayatos dikarhi chit vishyascha yasmin vishamam ratir nirnam. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. Again, O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human, and so are misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. The Lord's mercy upon the fallen souls is equally distributed. He has no one as a specific object of hostility. The very conception of the personality of Godhead as a human being is misleading. His pastimes appear to be exactly like a human being's, but actually, they are transcendental and without any tinge of material contamination. He is undoubtedly known as partial to his pure devotees, but in fact he is never partial, as much as the sun is never partial to anyone. By utilizing the sun rays, sometimes even the stones become valuable, whereas a blind man cannot see the sun, although there are enough sun rays before him. Darkness and light are two opposite conceptions, but this does not mean that the sun is partial in distributing its rays. The sun rays are open to everyone, but the capacities of the receptacles differ. Foolish people think that devotional service is flattering the Lord to get special mercy. Factually, pure devotees who are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are not a mercantile community. A mercantile house renders service to someone in exchange for values. Pure devotee does not render service unto the Lord for such exchange. And therefore, the full mercy of the Lord is open for him. In other words, said, a devotee who's pure, he's not doing it because he's thinking he wants something. So therefore, because he only wants Krishna's pleasure, and there's nothing behind it. Sometimes a very wealthy, very powerful person, famous person, we may do something to please them. And then we may think that we want something from them. But then we think, but they can be easily controlled, manipulated by doing something to please them so that I can get what I want from them. But here we see that Krishna is not such a person. He can't be controlled by anything except love. We can't. It's like recently we were relevant. We were speaking about how a devotee first conquers himself by controlling his mind, by controlling his tongue, controlling his anger, by controlling the urge to speak. So the devotee who has full control of his mind and senses and tongue and anger, because he conquers himself, nobody can control him. Nobody can manipulate him. Nobody can try to allure him or entice him to get something out of him. He's independent. He's under control himself. He's under superior control. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord, he doesn't need anything. I'm the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Krishna says everything emanates from me. Doesn't need anything. He's Atmarama. He's fully self-satisfied. Aptakama. He's the Supreme Proprietor. Everything animate or inanimate within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. So, therefore, because the Supreme Lord does not need anything, he can't be controlled by somebody who offers him something and says, so see what I'm offering you? Don't you want it? If you accept this from me, you think that we can bribe the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada is saying that right here. Foolish people think that devotional service is flattering the Lord to get special mercy. Foolish people think that a devotee is somebody who's flattering. Oh, you are so wonderful. You are the supreme. You are the greatest person. That thing Krishna said, oh, I'm flattered. The person who's flattered in this way, he's, in other words, he needs to build up his own self, his own conception of himself, so he can feel better about himself. Therefore, he's attracted by flattery. Oh, thank you. But Krishna doesn't need to build up a conception of himself. He's God. Who's his competitor? He's already the Supreme Lord. That's the one thing that a devotee understands. A devotee understands that Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasava Vritya. Krishna, there's only one Supreme Lord, Krishna. Arasava Vritya means everybody else is subordinate to him. Therefore, a devotee is one who knows there's only one Supreme Lord, who's always the Supreme Lord. And he never thinks that I'm equal to the Supreme Lord. He always understands that he's the Supreme and I'm subordinate. He's the master, I'm the servant. That is the devotee. So, the devotee doesn't try to flatter the Lord to get something from him. Oh, because he knows the Lord can't be flattered. But why is the devotee, someone may say, well, why do we have to glorify the Lord then if the Lord can't be flattered? The point is, we benefit by glorifying the Lord. When we glorify the Lord, when we understand His glories, His true glories, His true position, we begin to realize that my constitutional nature is that I'm His servant, and He is supreme. We benefit. So devotional service is not flattery, so that one can get something. And in fact, we see in the evidence of Scripture that the characteristic of a devotee is one who pleases the Lord by his service, and the Lord wants to do something, give something in return. But the devotee never wants it. The devotee always says, I just want to serve you. I just want to please you. That is a devotee. But because the relationship between the Lord and the devotee is a very special affair, and that's what Prabhupada is going to talk about here. Why does Krishna come to this world? Krishna comes, Paratanaya Sadhunam, Vinashaya Chudhuskritam, he comes because of the sadhu, because of his devotees. He's attracted by his devotees. In fact, I'm going to go a little bit ahead because I know I'm going to be limited as. When the Supreme Lord incarnates, he has two missions: to vanquish the demons and deliver the sadhus, the faithful devotees. The word sadhuna, which means saintly persons, refers to devotees. It has nothing to do with worldly honesty or dishonesty, morality or immorality. It has nothing to do with material activities. Sometimes we may think that the word sadhu refers to a person who is materially good or moral, but actually the word sadhu refers to one who is on the transcendental platform.
This verse is explained in Bhagavatam. The symptoms of a sadhu is that he's tolerant, he's merciful, he's friendly towards all living entities. His mind is always controlled. He's peaceful. He always abides from the scriptures, by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. Sadhava sadhubhushana. These are the ornaments. Bhushana means ornaments. These are the decorations of a sadhu. So a sadhu is, as Prabhupada is explaining here. So when we think that the sadhu refers to a person who's materially good and moral, but actually the word sadhu refers to one who's on the transcendental platform. A sadhu, therefore, is a devotee, because one who engages in devotional service is transcendental to material qualities. Sadhunam samati tyanta. Now the Lord comes to deliver the devotees, paratranaya sadhunam. But it is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee transcends the material qualities, sadhunam samati tyanta. Devotee is already in the transcendental position because he's no longer under the control of the three material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But if a sadhu is already delivered, being on the transcendental platform, then where is the necessity of delivering him? The question may arise, the Lord comes to deliver the devotee, but the devotee is already delivered. Therefore, the word vidambana means bewildering, is used in this verse. Because this appears contradictory. The answer to this contradiction is that a sadhu, a devotee, does not require deliverance. But because he is very much anxious to see the Supreme Lord face to face, Krishna comes not to deliver him from the clutches of matter, from which he has already been delivered, but to satisfy his inner desire. Just as a devotee wants to satisfy the Lord in all respects, the Lord even more wants to satisfy the devotee. Such are the exchanges of loving affairs. Even in our ordinary dealings, if we love someone, we want to satisfy him or her. And he or she also wants to reciprocate. So if the reciprocation of loving affairs exists in this material world, then what an elevated way must it exist in the spiritual world. Therefore, there is a verse in which the Lord says, the sadhu is in my heart, and I am also in the sadhu's heart. The sadhu is always thinking of Krishna. Krishna is always thinking of the sadhu, his devotee. So, this verse speaks about how the Lord's pastimes are bewildering because he appears to act in contradictory ways. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ajopi Sanavihaka, although I'm unborn, my transcendental body never deteriorates. although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna says, I'm unborn. Then why are we observing Janmashtami? What does it mean? Are we just deluding ourselves? We're just making believe this is a nice day to... Huh? Have a birthday party. Krishna said, I'm on board. So, it's a contradiction. Krishna says, I'm on board, and we're observing Krishna's birth. Janma, his birth. Janmashtami. None of that. There may be so many other contradictions that may appear in Krishna's behavior. Just like this verse explains that Krishna appears to be like an ordinary person because people do something to please him and he's flattered by it. So he does something, he gives them something back. Like an ordinary person who's flattered. He wasn't. So Krishna gives something to his devotees. So it looks like he's just an ordinary person who's controlled by flattery. But it also appears to be a contradiction. Also, another contradiction we can say is that Krishna is the supreme proprietor. He's served by thousands of goddesses of fortune. Thousands of goddesses of fortune serve him. But yet, he steals butter. Like a person who's in poverty, who's in need. That's a contradiction also. Why does Krishna steal butter? We glorify Krishna. Krishna is not afraid of anyone. Nobody can cause harm to Krishna. But Krishna ran in fear from the battlefield. From Jarasandha. He fled the battlefield. You read it's in Krishna book. Jarasandha attacked 17 times, and the 18th time he came with 23 Akshahini divisions of soldiers, which was, I don't know how many soldiers it was. And Jarasandha said, just see, I come with such a powerful army, now Krishna's running away, fleeing, out of fear. So, Krishna's, fear personified is afraid of Krishna, but yet Krishna's running in fear on the battlefield. Another contradiction. It's bewildering. These things are bewildering. They can't be understood by an ordinary person who can't understand why Krishna does what he does. So, for one who understands Krishna, who knows Krishna, that Krishna says, Bhakti Mama Bhajanati Yavanyas Jaspitapita. You can know me only by devotional service, can you know me. Only then can you enter into the mysteries of understanding. Or as we explained before, Tapi Devi Tadeva Padam Bhajanvaya. Unless one gets a drop of mercy of Krishna, lotus feet of Krishna, you'll never be able to understand Krishna's personality. Even if one studies the Vedas from millions of births. Krishna gives this understanding, reveals himself, which is not so easy to understand. Atakshi Krishna namadi nabhavet brayam indriyai. Sevamukehi jivado swayam emas purachita. Krishna can't be understood with these blunt material senses. We can't. Here we're talking about Krishna, but can we see Krishna with these blunt material senses? No. He can't be. We can't say, Krishna, look, come here. I want to see you. If you show yourself to me first, then I'll serve you. Krishna doesn't have to show himself. Why? Okay. Can we demand Krishna? Show me. Show yourself to me. Takshi Krishna Navati. Krishna can't be seen with these blunt material senses. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Sattaksadaiva Hridayesha Malampianti. Lord Brahma, in his Brahma Samhita, says, when one's eyes are anointed with the salve of love, then one can see Krishna. Why? Because it's love that conquers Krishna. And Krishna is very much inclined to to reveal himself, to reveal his personality, to show himself, to give himself. And there's love. But what is the characteristic of love? Love means, I don't want anything from you, Krishna, except to please you. That is love. In other words, we can't cheat Krishna. Krishna is he's the greatest cheater. We may try to cheat Krishna, but Krishna can cheat better than we can. He cheated Bali Maharaj. He told Bali Maharaj, you give me 3 steps of land. As Vamana, when he appeared. And what did he do? Bali Maharaj said, I can give you so much more. Why are you asking me? I am confident in upper planetary systems. I can give up. Why are you asking for only 3 steps of land? And Lord Vamana Dev said, well, you know, I'm a Brahmin, and a Brahmin should simply live very simply and austerely, and I just need enough land to just lie down my body at night, go to sleep. If I want more than that, then I'll lose my austerities, I'll lose my sense of austerities, I'll lose my Brahma Tejas, my Shakti, my potency. 3 steps, that's all I want. And so, this is what Brahmana asked for. So Bali Maharaj said, okay. So, as we know, what did he do? His first step. He covered. What was? He covered. He went to the top of the universe. That was the second step, wasn't it? Yes. First step went where? Second step, he went to the coverings of the universe. And first, the universe with his toe, and then Ganges entered into the universe. And he took everything in 2 steps. And he said to Bali Maharaj, he said, you offered me 3 steps. Where should I put my 3rd step? And not only that, but when Bali Maharaj couldn't give him anything for his 3rd step, then Lord Vamanadeva had him arrested, insulted, tied up by the ropes of Varuna and dragged before him, and said, you offered me 3 steps, where do I put my 3rd step? Cheated him. So, Krishna, we may try to cheat Krishna, but Krishna is the greatest cheat. But when Krishna cheats, it's wonderful. Because when Krishna cheats, he takes everything from his devotee, and what happens? His devotee realizes, I've got nothing else except you, Krishna. That's Krishna's mercy. That's Krishna's mercy. When Krishna cheats, it's his mercy. Because why then? The devotee is left with, I have nothing else, only you. And therefore, what did Bali Maharaj do when he realized I'd been cheated? In 2 steps, he said, well, there's no place else where I can offer the 3rd step except if you place your 3rd step on my head. Because it says that the possessor is greater than all that he possesses. So therefore, since I am the possessor of everything that you've already taken from me, you might as well put your 3rd step on my head and take me too. He surrendered everything. Krishna became so pleased. So pleased by his devotional service, Bali Maharaj is glorified for having surrendered everything to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And the Lord gave himself. He became his doorkeeper. And gave him his own planet. Became his doorkeeper. Personally, he became his doorkeeper, the gatekeeper. So, we can't cheat Krishna and say, I'm going to hide my motive from you, Krishna. Show yourself to me. Or, do this. I'll do this for you. And we come out later and say to Krishna, I did this for you because I wanted you to do this for me, but you didn't do this for me, so I'm not going to serve you anymore. That's not important. You didn't do this for me, I know. This Lord Chaitanya talked in the Shikshastra prayers. I know no one but Krishna, but my Lord. He made me handling by his roughly by his embrace. He may make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and anything, everything he wants to be, but he's always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. That is devotee. Whatever Krishna does, it's his mercy. And therefore the devotee says, Krishna, you can do whatever you want, but please you do it. If you do it, it's your mercy. I don't want to be kicked by your illusory energy anymore. If you do it, I know it's for my benefit. Whatever you do. Even if you handle me roughly by your embrace, or make me brokenhearted, even if you take everything away from me. In the story of Bali Maharaj, Prabhupada explains, there is a verse, Yasyaham Anugrahami Harishyat Dattanam Shinai. But as Krishna is particularly merciful to somebody, he takes everything away from him and leaves him with nothing. So that the devotee realizes, all I have is Krishna. And therefore, because all he has is Krishna, then Krishna becomes his only possession. When one has Krishna, one has everything. So sometimes Krishna may take everything away from a devotee. But Prabhupada explains in the story of Bali Maharaj, he says, although Krishna may sometimes take away everything from a devotee, and that is his mercy, sometimes Krishna gives his extra special mercy. What is the extra special mercy? Extra special mercy is Krishna lets his devotee keep everything. And the devotee never becomes proud. That's his special mercy. So, you may feel some relief. Hold on. I'll go for the extra special mercy. Mercy is one thing. What extra special mercy? That's... I'll go for that. Let me keep everything. Sometimes when a person becomes very wealthy, becomes very proud, he may become very proud. And there is a verse in the Bhagavatam which says, the Supreme Lord is very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but who are fully satisfied in possessing only devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And so, indeed, the Supreme Lord relishes the activities of such a devotee. Those who are proud of possessing, those who are generally proud of possessing high opulence, bodily beauty, janmaishvaya, shuta shabhya, inamana madhapamana, those who are proud of possessing such things, they generally become puffed up. And because of that pride, what do? They oftentimes will deride devotees. They'll make fun. And even if such persons offer the Lord worship, the Lord will never accept it. He's not interested. Such persons make gifts, whatever they want. They may give millions of dollars to Krishna, but Krishna's not interested. Why? Because if a person becomes proud, very dangerous. He's proud of his wealth. That's why Queen Kunti, Janmaishvaya Shrutya Shabye, Damana Madhapaman. He says, my dear Lord, your lordship can be approached by those who are materially exhausted, those who are on the path of material progress, trying to improve themselves by great opulence, bodily beauty, respectful parentage. They cannot approach you with sincere feelings. They're proud. They think, why do I need the Supreme Lord? I have. Why should I surrender to the Supreme Lord? I'll do something for him. Yes, okay, I'll do something. Because of their pride, the Lord is not inclined to accept. So, therefore, Prabhupada says, extra special mercy means that a devotee may live in opulence, but he never becomes proud. Never. Because he knows everything belongs to Krishna. My wealth, sons, family, Kamala Dala Jana It's wealth, sons, youth, family. What is there in it? Does this a drop appears in a lotus leaf? Such as this life, or why simply take up the worship of Sri Hari, the only necessity? The devotee knows that everything belongs. Manasa deha geha, yoki chumora. Bhakti vinodha kwa prayas. Everything belongs to you, Krishna. I'm simply your dog, and this is your home, and I simply stand outside on the doorstep, protecting your home. Bhakti vinodha kwa prayas like this. Let me be your dog. Everything belongs to you. So one who thinks this way, he's never proud. And therefore the Lord is very important. But sometimes if a devotee becomes proud, in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita has stated that when my devotee engages in my devotional service and at the same time he wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he's like a fool who willingly drinks poison. Why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget. When my devotee engages in my service, I'll fulfill his desire, and at the same time wants these material opulences, I'll fulfill his desires in such a way that he won't come back and ask for them again. That is Krishna's kindness. That is his mercy. So, the point about Krishna's pastimes, which are very bewildering, is that Krishna behaves in one way from his position of being the Supreme Lord. But he behaves in a different way when he becomes subordinate to his devotee. Because it is that devotee's channel service which actually is Krishna's most opulent, attractive feature. Bhaktivatsala is called. Vrityavashita is another Sanskrit word. It means when Krishna comes under the control of his devotee by love. When Krishna comes under the control of his devotee by love, he may act in a way which may appear completely contradictory to being the Supreme Lord. Just as we said, he's unborn, but he's conquered by the love of Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj, who want nothing except to enjoy Krishna as their son. So Krishna's conquered by their love and becomes their son. So much so that when Mother Jasoda tries to chastise him, Krishna cries, genuine tears of fear. He runs in fear from the stick of Mother Jasoda. Another contradiction. Fear personified is afraid of Krishna, but Krishna is afraid of the stick of Mother Jasoda. Why? Fear personified is afraid of Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, the destroyer of all the worlds. Simply by one breath, inhalation, it can immediately destroy entire cosmic manifestation in one breath. How could keep fear for anything? Yet, as the Supreme, he creates unlimited universes, maintains them, destroys them, but as Bhaktivatsala, as the devotee of his devotee, he's conquered. And he acts in a contradictory way. He becomes the son of Jasoda, Jasoda Nandana. He becomes the son of Devaki, Devaki Nandana. Nanda Nandana. He becomes their son. And they chastise him. And he becomes afraid. There's a wonderful description of how, just like we said, Krishna is the supreme proprietor, but yet he steals butter like a person who's in need. And there's pastimes which describe how Krishna always feels butter. The Mother Jasoda, she's always correcting her son, chastising him for stealing butter. One time, Krishna was in the house, and he was reaching into the butter pot, and looked, saw his reflection, and thought, this is somebody else, and said, what are you doing here?
My dear brother,
he thought it was Balaram. Don't tell Mother Jasoda I was stealing this butter. If you don't tell her, I'll share some of this butter with you. And Jasoda, she was looking, she was watching all this. And she was smiling at this Krishna. And she came and said, Krishna, what are you doing? And Krishna said, turned to the reflection and said, well, this person was trying to steal the butter, and I was telling him, no, no, you can't take this butter, it belongs to my mother. And then one time Krishna was putting his hand in the pot, Mother Jasoda caught him. And Krishna, Mother Jasoda said to Krishna, what are you doing? And Krishna said, well, this ruby bracelet above my head was burning my hand, and I put my hand in the pot to cool it off. Butter. And then Mother Jasoda, she said, well, let me see. She takes Krishna's hand and says, you're right, look at this. She takes the bracelet off Krishna's hand and says, oh, now you have no reason to put your hand in the butter pot. Take the bracelet away from you. These are Krishna's pastimes of love. This is another pastime. Actually, this is a very nice description. I'll read it. But we'll have to see, know we're getting close. Anyways, this is a pastime of Krishna. It's yes, there's another. One night, the soothing rays of the full moon illumined the courtyard of Nanda's house. Yasoda sat there talking with some elderly gopis while Krishna played nearby, gazing at the moon. Sneaking up behind Yasoda, Krishna removed the veil covering her head, loosened her braid, and patted her on the back to get her attention with his butter-soft lotus palms. His voice choked up as he continually cried. Yasoda's heart swelled with maternal love, so she indicated with a glance that her friend should attend to Krishna. In other words, Krishna was trying to get Yasoda's attention. So how does Krishna try to get Yasoda's attention? He comes up, pulls off her sari, starts pulling on her braid, and says, but Mother Jasoda, she becomes so overwhelmed with love, she realizes that my friend should see what Krishna wants. So then what does Krishna say? With great respect and affection, the gopis enthusiastically lifted up Krishna and asked, oh darling, what do you want? Do you want some cure? Krishna replied, no, no. Do you want some thick creamy yogurt? Why are they asking this? Because Krishna is usually, this is the things he wants. Do you want some creamy yogurt? Krishna replied, no, no. Do you want some cheese? Again, Krishna said, no. I want freshly churned condensed butter. The gopis continued. Do not let man to be angry with your mother. What do you mean by condensed butter? Pointing his little index finger to the full moon, Krishna replied, I want that freshly churned condensed butter. Krishna, you wanted the moon. You thought it was butter. It looked like butter. So all of the gopis said, "Oh, Vatsa, do not mistake the moon for a huge piece of butter. It's a Rajahansa swan gliding across the lake of the sky." Krishna said, "Then give me the Rajahansa so I can play with him. Quickly catch him before he reaches the bank of the lake." Full anxiety, Krishna kicked his legs and cried loudly, "Give me! Give me!" When Krishna showed his childish antics, some other gopis said, "Oh, darling, they have lied to you. What you see is not a Rajahansa, but it is the moon hanging in the sky, and it's called Chandra." Krishna said, "Then give me that Chandra. I really want it so I can play with it. Right now, get it!" So Krishna was demanding these things from the gopis. And Yasoda, placing her crying son on her lap and comforted him, "Darling, actually, it is freshly churned condensed butter. This is definitely it is not Rajahansa, nor it is the moon. Regardless, I can never give it to you. Just see by chance or by the arrangement of providence, it has poisonous spots on it. Although it looks very tasty, no one in this world can eat it." Then Krishna said, "Mother, why is it stained with spots of poison? What is poison anyway?" Seeing a change in Krishna's mood, Mother Yasoda embraced him and spoke in a gentle, sweet voice, "Listen attentively, my dearest son. There is an ocean of milk called Krishna Sagar." Krishna says, "Mother, please tell me about that. How many milk cows made that ocean?" So it says, "Darling, the milk ocean was not made by cows." "Mother, you are lying to me. How could it be milk without cows?" So it says, "The one who gave cows the ability to produce milk can also make milk even without cows." Krishna says, "Who is it?" So it says, "He's the Lord, the cause of creation." Because Yasoda never thinks Krishna's son. I mean, Krishna's God. She never thinks this. She thinks Krishna's the son. So that's the nature of the love that has conquered Krishna. That Krishna becomes such a perfect son that Yasoda never thinks that he's God. He's covered by Yoga Maya. And therefore she never thinks when Mother Yasoda sees Krishna returning from the pasturing grounds and sees all the demigods showering flowers on Krishna, she thinks, "Oh, look at my son. The demigods are throwing flowers to him." She never thinks, "Why are the demigods throwing flowers?" I'm like, no, she doesn't think like that. She thinks this is wonderful. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives the example that if her son is the president, still, even though he's a great, he's the president, still, mother thinks this is my son. So Mother Yasoda never thinks Krishna's God. Even if the demigods are showering flowers, they think, "Well, my son Krishna, look at his throwing flower petals on him." Never for a moment does she, her thought of Krishna become disturbed by having to think of him as God. She had to think of him as God, and how could she chastise him? How could she instruct him in this way? How could she bathe him and treat her as a young child, punishing him? How could Krishna's boyfriends jump on his back? They had to think that Krishna's God? Would you jump on God's back if you knew it was God? You'd be afraid. One small kick, one small mistake, and what's going to happen to me? But that's Bhaktivatsalya. That's how Krishna reciprocates with unalloyed love. He reciprocates because he doesn't want to be God with them. For those who want him to be God, he'll be God. He'll be the source of the material spiritual worlds. He'll be, yes, and he'll He's God, the supreme proprietor of all the planets and demigods. But for those who actually conquer Krishna with their love, Krishna becomes far greater than being God. It's even greater. What's greater than being God? Just think how great God is that He's so great that although He's God, He wants to forget about being God so He can serve His devotees. That's greater. Any other great person that we know, they're always proud of their greatness. They want to be known as great. They think, yes, let me do this for Him. Let me give in charity. Let them see me as great and I'll do something nice for them. But Krishna doesn't want to always be seen as the Supreme Lord. And therefore, He's conquered by this love. And therefore, when Mother Jasoda, you know, says, well, sorry, Krishna, but this milk ocean is not made by cows. Mother, you lied to me. How could it be milk without cows? Well, Mother Jasoda is the one who gave cows the ability to produce milk, can also make milk even without cows. So Krishna says, who is it? Krishna is not going to say to you. Yes, because the residents of the Loka Vrindavan, they think that there's some Bhagavan, Supreme Lord, but they never think it's Krishna. So she says, He's the Lord, the cause of creation. He's Bhagavan. He's immovable and all-pervading. Although He's everywhere, I cannot show Him to you. Krishna says, Mother, you're telling me the truth. Sora says, long ago, the demigods and demons had a fight to favor the demigods and bewilder the demons. The Lord churned the ocean of milk. Mandara Mountain served as the churning rod, and Vasuki, the king of the serpents, offered his body for the rope. The demons and the demigods stood on opposite sides, pulling that rope. Krishna says, well, did they churn the way the gopis did? Krishna always sees the copies. Churning that milk into butter. Maybe this vine was fixed with butter. He wants that. That's butter. So we think, but they churn the way the gopis give, then that's butter. And why are you telling me it's got poison on it? So he says, Mother, did he churn the way the gopis do? Yes, my son, the churning of the Kshirasagra produced a poison named Kalakuta. Mother, how did churning produce poison? Only snakes have poison. Darling, Mahendra drank that poison. Shiva drank that ocean of poison and held it in his throat, known as Nilakanta. Mahadev drank that poison. But the snakes drank the drops of poison that fell from his mouth. As a result, they now have poison. The poison rising from that milk is also the energy of the Lord. Krishna says, yes, Mother, that is indeed true. So he says, darling, this condensed butter that you are seeing in the sky is produced from that Kshirasagra. That is why the moon is spotted with the remnants of that poison. Look carefully, do you see it? Therefore, do not try to eat that butter, but please take my freshly churned butter instead. After hearing this description, Krishna fell sleepy. So Mother Jasoda put him to rest in an opulent golden bed and a fluffy soft mattress, whiter than powdered camphor. The next morning, Jasoda brought butter, yogurt, and other eatables to Krishna's room. Lovingly fondling his body, she said, wake up. God forbid, you seem to be weak from not eating sufficiently yesterday. After Krishna awoke, Jasoda cleansed his mouth with scented water, and she offered him a golden plate full of butter, yogurt, and other delights while saying, oh, my beloved son, take whatever you like. So in other words, Mother Jasoda convinced Krishna that he couldn't. Instead of telling this whole story, Krishna, while he's hearing this whole story, fell asleep. And Krishna never got his freshly condensed butter. So Mother Jasoda was thinking, I've been churning this butter just for Krishna. Therefore, let me offer this butter Krishna in the morning. But Krishna says, Mother, I will not eat anything that you have brought me. Last night you lied to me. You put me to sleep. And I felt very distressed with the hunger. Yasoda said, Krishna, if you went to sleep, then who stole the butter? Krishna replied, Mother, when did I steal the butter? You were lying. With this charming transcendental pastimes, Krishna continually captivated the heart of Mother Yasoda. There's another bewilderment. Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. But he lies. He lies to his mother. He said, I didn't steal the butter. Why does he lie to his mother? Some pleasure. Sometimes when the gopis come and they complain to Mother Yasoda, do you know your son untied all the calves and all the calves went and drank all the cow's milk this morning? Do you know that your son came into our house and stood up on the tables and stole all the butter when we tried to chase him? He said, stop! What are you doing? Why are you taking this butter? Stop, you thief! And your son said, what do you mean, thief? Don't you know this butter belongs to me? Complained to Yasoda like that. And then so many other complaints they started raising. Krishna was, they said how they decorated the house with lime and put fresh clay on it. And he said, your son came and he threw dirt all over the walls of our freshly cleaned houses. They were complaining, but actually they were relishing Krishna's mischief. Just came just because they wanted to talk about Krishna, that's all. But then Krishna turned to Mother Yasoda and said, Mother, actually, all these women, they're mine. I didn't take any of them, Mother. I go to their house in the morning because I'm very attracted by their friendship, by their love, and therefore I went to their house, but I didn't do anything to say to me. Krishna clearly lies. Relax. He's the Supreme Absolute Truth. Why? Because it brings pleasure. It increases the pleasure of his devotees. But non-devotees can understand. They think, how can your God be a liar? How can your God run in fear? The Supreme God runs in fear. How can your God take birth? They think so many things. They think the Supreme Lord can't appear. But he does, because he's Rishi Vashita, Bhakta. He does, because he's conquered by the love of his devotees. And therefore, it is very difficult to understand. Queen Kunti, she's praying that in this prayer, she says, Oh Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes which appear to be human and so are misleading. They appear to be human, but although they appear to be human, Krishna is always the Supreme Absolute Truth, always transcendental. And he's always conquered by the love of his devotees. Therefore, when Krishna comes to this world, we speak of his birth, janma karma chayam, his birth, his activities in this world. When Krishna comes to this world, he comes because of his devotees. He doesn't have to come to kill demons. He says, paratanaya sudanam vinashya chudushpita. To kill demons, Krishna can do that without having to come. He can do it very easily. Everything happens according to his will. But because his devotees want to see him, to satisfy the inner desires of his devotees, Krishna appears before them to give them pleasure. Therefore, Krishna appears in this world. So, this is one of the understandings we get about the apparent contradictions or bewildering pastimes of the Supreme Lord, is that they're bewildering for those who cannot understand the position of the Supreme Lord, who cannot understand his personality, who cannot understand why he does what he does. But how can one know why he does what he does?
only by accepting him as he is. Only by accepting that he is the Supreme and we are his servants. There's no other way. Krishna says, Bhaktivana Vajanati, Yavanas Jasmitatvita. There's no other way you can enter into the mysteries of understanding me, Krishna. Only by Anubhava devotional service can you understand me as I am without standing before you. There's no other way you can understand these mysteries. People, Avajanati Mamudha. Fools deride me when I descend in this transcendental form. They do not know my supreme dominion over all that being, my transcendental position in my supreme over all that being. Fools deride me, Mudha, Krishna says. Such fools, they cannot understand who I am when I descend in this world. And the devotee knows. And therefore, although Krishna is very difficult to understand, he makes himself understandable to those who hear these transcendental narrations, as we said in the beginning, with faith. One who hears these transcendental narrations about the activities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord with faith and goes on hearing them, who are spoken by the Lord, or spoken by devotees of the Lord, they may certainly conquer Krishna. Although Krishna is otherwise unconquerable by anyone in the materials. This is the way to conquer Krishna. And as we said, although we may not want to conquer Krishna, nonetheless, when Krishna sees his devotees who are very eager to hear, very eager to chant, he delivers them from the repetition of birth and death. He delivers them. They are already delivered. Marashriya katha mishta shrimvanti kati anticha the panti vivitastapa naitama gachitetasa engaged constantly in hearing and chanting about me. Sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my activities and pastimes in this world. They are already delivered. They are already delivered because their mind, their thoughts, their words are already absorbed totally in thoughts of Krishna and the Ihayasya Hare Dasi, Kamana Manasagira, Nicholas Vaptipastasu, Jiva Muktasu Uchute. Anyone who engages his body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna completely is already a liberated soul, even while within this material world. Liberated. That is the power of devotional service. It is liberated activity. And for those who take up this liberated activity, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna, who get a little taste, a little drop of Krishna's mercy, gradually they can understand Krishna. And they can understand why he comes to this world, why he appears in this world. And they can understand why it is that we're sitting here today to observe Sri Krishna Janmashtami. It's not to come to get benedictions from Krishna. It's come to please Krishna. To hear about them. To sacrifice. It's not easy sitting this long listening to me for however long I've been speaking. It's a sacrifice. If you do it, not just today, Krishna's activities are always transcendental, not just of his appearance. Therefore, it is said that one should hear about Krishna every day. Smartavyam satatam vishnur vismartavyam najatujit. Najatujit. Savadim is here to share 80 or ever think that Krishna must always be remembered, he must never be forgotten. Not just on Janmashtami. Every day. If we practice every day, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Krishna book, chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna will become pleased by this. He will be conquered by that service, by that surrender. And he He can fulfill all our desires. Much better than we can try to fulfill ourselves. That is Krishna consciousness. So, I think we have to have a pleasure.